Show me love, show me love.
So, everybody, welcome back to Just Play Podcast with myself, Andy Aitken, and Ryan Tricky. And we are moving into part two of getting a three-year-old to national champion. So if you've not listened to part one, please check it out, because it's pretty important, because we're going into part two. And where we left you, and obviously at a pretty critical moment, isn't it, Ryan? We have now basically finished at 11 years old, and we are moving on to being 12. So as we mentioned in part one, nutrition, training obviously taking different complexities in terms of physical, technical, tactical, all things we need to consider as tennis coaches and obviously as players. But I guess we're now transitioning certainly into full yellow ball. Where would you now start to see the sort of the priorities of Z player that we're now hopefully having worked for, I guess, eight, nine years coming up, I guess, from 3 years old?
I'm just thinking that by now we would have established a fairly good start to our technical game. We're starting to understand what is expected of our training regime. So by now I'm thinking about probably periodization, thinking about putting in place a plan for the year, perhaps getting the goal setting going for this particular player. Working on certain technical and tactical goals that this said player is going to be, needing work with. Similarly, doing a tournament and competition plan. So trying to think more about the next 6 years, really, of kind of competition planning and just, you know, the general regime that this person will technically follow. I've been looking at, within that tournament program, just trying to get them to do a three to four month competition program with like a warm up to Grand Slam kind of idea. So, because we've got graded tournaments in tennis that start from six, which is a club play, to one, which is international, our players should be definitely around potential county standard now, in which case they are grade fours. So I'd be looking to get kind of warm up with a couple of grade fours into grade threes being the Grand Slam, kind of working that periodization. And then, as I said before, the technical, tactical sort of stuff will still be in the tactical, probably in the group stuff that we run. And then the technical stuff definitely within our game plans and private lessons. So, and then obviously in keeping with that, you know, the fitness, nutrition, will probably step that up a little notch, as they get more developed and that type of stuff. So anyway, how about yourself?
Yeah, I think it's all relative, isn't it? Essentially, I think certainly we spoke about in part one, obviously the social and the fun element. And I guess I'm still a big believer when they're hitting 12 years old onwards. I guess I'm probably looking more obviously 12, 14, we're still trying to make this player very independent and obviously very knowledgeable in terms of obviously tennis IQ, I guess you could call it. So the tactics and, you know, and some of this, I guess, is natural. Some of it obviously is going to be taught by us as tennis coaches. I think I still go back to, we spoke about it in part one, sort of that fundamental in terms of what's the key attribute. And I'm still a firm believer, if you move well, then you're going to, you're solving part of the game anyway. I know there's obviously a lot behind that, but if I'm to pick one key attribute, it's going to be the movement, the coordination and sort of, I guess, the 360 degree athlete. In terms of goal setting, I think this is certainly more paramount. I'd like to think certainly we're getting I guess, we're having this discussion in terms of getting a national champion to 18 years old, aren't we? So essentially at 12 years old, 11, 12 years old, are we worried if they're still playing county regional tournaments? Probably not. I mean, I think there's still a long pathway. I think a lot of parents potentially listening to this will be like, well, if my child isn't top 20 in the country at 11, 12 years old, should I be worried? Or do I ever think they're going to make it to, you know, junior grand slams, or, you know, the aspirations that they may want to get to? I think it's still very much a marathon, not a sprint, sort of analogy, really, isn't it? And like a lot of sports, and whether it be golf, or you know, obviously more recently what's happened in the golf at the Masters, or football, you know, the hard work has to be still put in. And yeah, I think if you truly believe in the methods, the goal setting, the periodization put in front of you, there's no reason why you can't achieve it. But surely, would you agree, sort of the, I guess, speaking about the player, is the belief now at 12 years old that they can make it quite important? And the reason why I ask that question, essentially, if you're looking at a 12 years old player who's like, oh, I still enjoy it, but I don't think I can make it to national champion, you know, does that maybe pull them a step back? It's quite a tough question, I guess, to answer, but I hope that makes a little bit of sense. You know, you're looking at maybe not necessarily like an arrogant tennis player, maybe an extrovert, maybe, you know, a player that potentially really believes they can get there. They may not be at the top now, but they believe that, you know, they can get there. They've got the drive to do it, I guess. We might have spoken about it in part one a little bit, just having that not necessarily obsession, but that real drive to get there.
Well, I think, you know, if a player really wants it, it's that hard work beats talent sort of idea, isn't it? You know, if they're adamant that they've got it, and they, you know, they think that, you know, they want it that much, then, you know, it's clear as day. It's just the coach keeping them on track, you know, making sure that they are doing what they need to do, and they don't step away from, you know, or deviate from that plan. Or if they deviate, then you have the meetings about, you know, what could happen if that does happen. So we're kind of nurturing the player, really, aren't we? We want them to take control of their own journey, but be advisors, like the parents. You know, parents listening to this, you are the advisors. And obviously, you know, glorified taxi drivers, isn't it, so to speak? But, you know, and obviously you're paying for things, and then the coaches are there to do the delivery of lessons, because they've got the expertise to, you know, give them the knowledge that they need to get them there. So if they're really adamant they want to, you know, they got there, and like, it's a toughie, because, you know, arrogance is, for me, I think arrogance is sometimes a good thing to have, isn't it? Because obviously if you've got arrogance, then, you know, it's confidence. But I suppose you've got to back it up with, you know, the bit behind it as well. You know, you've got to be able to play the game. If you've got arrogance and can't play the game, as well as, you know, the next person who's working harder behind you, and you've got a bit of work to put out there, haven't you? So it's kind of, you know, it's a tough job, isn't it? I think, yeah, we want to try and build confidence in our players, but we also want them to be grounded players as well. So we don't want to, you know, we don't want to be overconfident. As I kind of refer, it would be like a 6 out of 10 player. So that, you know, their motivation when they're playing matches, they don't want to be too, you know, 10 out of 10 and overexcited. They don't want to be 1 out of 1 being completely negative. They want to be like 6 out of 10 where they're feeling positive, but they're not, you know, kind of overexcited. Does that make sense? Or over arrogant or overconfident? Or, yeah, I'm kind of looking about just a bit beyond that kind of neutral stage. I think if you can get a player to that kind of mindset and that kind of work rate and that kind of periodization, I think, you know, I think we'll definitely get ourselves well on the way to it. Obviously, their hard work is 10 out of 10. They're putting 100% in whatever they do. But we've got to try and manage their mindset a little bit, which I think is, you know, like you said, movement is really important. The tactical side of things, the technical side of things, learning the game. But the mindset is also going to be one of those major things that are going to pull a player, you know, or deviate them in the right or wrong way. And it's up to us to help them, parents to help them, you know, stay on the right course. What would you add to that?
Yeah, no, I think you sort of hit the nail on the head, and a little bit as you're speaking now, I'm thinking about sort of, you know, the time that we went on our SPC, and I still do a little bit today with my sort of developmental players. And I say developmental, people will probably call them performance players, but I'm I guess a bit of a firm believer that if you're a performance player, then you're making a living out of it. We've obviously had discussions about this before, so mm-hmm. You know, I think having like a folder, which I do with a couple of players and have done over time, but that's always been adaptable depending on the player in front of them. But one I do for a current player that I teach at the moment, actually ironically 11 years old, is essentially he has to fill out like a pre-tournament sheet for himself, but he sort of gives himself a score out of 10 how he's feeling on the day. So I think it's just making players realize not every day you're going to go into every tournament feeling great. So, you know, he'll score himself based on, you know, how he feels waking up and things like that. And, you know, it'll be score out of 10, and it might be in the end of the match or tournament how he feels after that. And lots of contributing factors from life go into how we start a tournament, right? You know, you may have the best night's sleep. Us as adults and parents, we're probably not going to have the greatest night's sleep, and then having to play a match at 10 a.m. the next day, maybe going to feel a bit groggy, not the best, didn't have the best nutrition. So, but again, referring, I guess, to kids, is essentially, you know, there's so much going on in their life, whether it's parents or siblings. I think having their, like you say, their mindset very focused, goal orientated, match orientated, and very bespoke from coaches, right? So what I do is going to be very different to yourself and other tennis centers. I think it's just a lot of it is just going to be about the player and just trying to get the best out of them. And again, another example is the player I've been working certainly with recently is essentially when I've been working with the player, emotions have been quite a contributing factor. So it really is trying to make sure that he can keep a check on the emotions, if that makes a little bit of sense, and knowledgeable in terms of obviously keeping them on, yeah, the straight and narrow, I guess. I don't know whether you have similar players. Emotions, certainly 11, 12 years old, are tricky, as it is when you're 37 as well.
You know, going back to your kind of little journey about, you know, saying to players how they feel, I think we didn't maybe touch on that on episode one, but I would like to kind of just go back to that and say that, you know, when we're in mini res to orange, you know, green, we're moving up the stages, we would probably do stuff like that where we say, look, you know, it might be quite a light-hearted, you know, red stage, wouldn't it? Like, you know, how are you feeling today? Give us a mark, 10, okay? You know, and that's, you know, before the match, let's say, or, you know, it wouldn't be such a big deal. But as we go through it, we kind of just, I suppose, get a bit more particular or a bit more specific, don't we, about what we're asking them and why we're asking them that stuff. So we want to kind of just feed it to them at the start, and then get a little bit more specific as we go as to what they're feeling and their emotions, just so they can start to kind of get the idea that by 12 years old, this is just something that kind of rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? You know, it's kind of like, oh yeah, I'm feeling 10 beforehand. You know, we try and teach people mental skills and coping strategies that, you know, enable players to develop, and obviously, you know, not feel overwhelmed, and obviously, yeah, kind of getting that kind of phase. So so by now we're talking 12 to 14, I suppose, we're thinking, these kids know a little bit about goal setting. They know about how to get their mindset to a, you know, at the right stage. You know, they know what their behaviour is going to be like. They know how they're going to be feeling. They're going to be probably writing at 12 to 14, what they've done good, what they haven't done so well in matches, for example. So it's good feedback back to the coaches. So then it goes back to when you do your goal setting for your training programmes and your periodisation plans, that you can put that into the next training plan, if that makes sense.
So when we're obviously, yeah, 12, 14, I think it's going to be, yeah, it's a crucial part of being autonomous, and isn't it? I think that's probably where we want to be. But moving on now, 14 onwards, anything changing for you? Or coming back to another point, sorry.
Yeah, so just before we carry on, I think it's just recognising where we're going to be at that stage in terms of tournaments. What is your kind of perception of where, I mean, we kind of touched on it, I suppose, but it's important for the parents to know that obviously as the results come in and, you know, their gradings might be at a grade 5 to start off with, you know, back in the day. And then obviously as they get better, they go to a Grand Slam grade 4. And then obviously as they're starting to get fairly successful results at grade 4 level, then it's important that they kind of then move that grade 4 as their kind of warm-up event. And then the grade 3 becomes the Grand Slam. So kind of you're constantly giving them challenge either side, if that makes sense. So if they're reaching finals all the time at grade 4 level, then they need to up their little, you know, their next stage to a grade 3. I think at this time, you know, when we're kind of talking about 12 to 14 year olds and stuff, they should be at this stage probably around that grade three level, shouldn't they, really? Certainly,
yeah.
End of grade three.
Yeah.
And then moving, you know, 14 to 16s, we've then got a good amount of time to kind of get them between that grade three, grade two kind of level. And then when we're kind of talking about grade, you know, three, twos, you're kind of talking about, you know, hitting that national stage, aren't you? And so for me, 14 to 16s, you know, again, we haven't, I suppose, what we'll take into account is the outside world as well of these kids, because now 14 to 16, we've got some important kind of stages in their life academically and emotionally, things that they're going to be going through that are going to be just as important as tennis. You know, tennis is a great sport, lovely. You've got your goals and stuff, but obviously having a, you know, academic qualifications, that type of stuff is vital, isn't it? So, you know, that has to come into the programming at some stage. So, yeah, I think, 14 to 16s, we're just kind of, you know, getting them up to that grade threes, hopefully starting to get, you know, into better stages at grade threes and possibly looking to like a grade two in terms of like, you know, planning and things. It's much the same, but, you know, obviously the goals are just changing. Fitness, you know, obviously all these goals were just kind of elevating challenge on them. And maybe a bit of expectation, maybe giving back ownership to them to be going out as they have been doing, going back to the, you know, back to their courts and doing things a bit more themselves as well as, you know, then using us, if that makes sense. So they're going and practicing on their own to do serving and working on the things that they need to, and then obviously coming back to us. And we're kind of, you know, having that little bit of core time with them that can really make a difference. And then they go back out and practice again.
Yeah, I think I probably actually, just I know you've done a really good part on that. I guess listening to that very last part and something potentially just to look back at really is just to think about, I guess, a question for you and I, and again, I'll answer it first in terms of actually the 12 onwards bracket in terms of, I guess for parents listening, for us to answer, how important is it that players become full time? So this is like a question that I've had in the past. I don't get it as recently now, just due to where I am. But, you know, what is a full time player in terms of hours? Is it a case of actually being homeschooled? So my, I guess, opinion on this might be slightly different to you. I think you can become a national champion having a full time education. I think it's a balance between obviously really dedicating yourself to a sport, but also having to do education. Now, if you ask me typically how much a child should be competing / training, all encompassing one along with S&C in a week, I think you're probably looking at certainly a minimum of 25 hours. So if you're training 3 hours minimum a day for 5 days, 4 or 5 days, that's obviously, you know, 12 to 15 hours. And then obviously if you're competing on a Saturday, so I know you've got practice matches, for example, that could be, you know, at least 5 hours a day. So I think for me, certainly just for any parents potentially listening, I think you don't have to become this child or this parent that comes out of, you're taken out of school to dedicate yourself to a career. It probably helps to do it, but I think it's still possible. Again, it goes back to what you say in terms of hard work beats talent every day. I think you can have small pockets of training and go 100% effort and really dedicate yourself, whereas maybe some other people who go full time go at 60% and still have the same outcome. So don't know what your thoughts are in terms of, yeah, I guess answering that sort of question for parents, really.
Yeah, I think it's a tough one, isn't it? No, I certainly think, yeah, like you say, homeschooling is actually becoming more apparent. So, like, it's in today's society, isn't it? Just without going national champion, a lot of people tend to I've taken kids out of school and to do that, but I don't, you know, I don't think you necessarily need to. I think you just got to get smarter with the way that you plan. Like you say, it's, you know, minimum, I would say sort of, yeah, 20 to 25 hours, depending if you use that as S&C, you know, that type of stuff. It could be a little bit more because obviously the way your kind of sessions break down, it's important to get rest. I think it's also important to ensure they get a time out and they get time with their friends. I think sometimes, you know, I suppose to do the sport and to get to a certain level, you've got to dedicate your life to it. So it does mean certain things being left out, if that makes sense. Or certainly by, you know, where some people might go and see their mates every night and they might go and do whatever, socialise, that type of stuff. It might look different to our tennis players, for example. You know, and you might add to that in a minute, like, you know, about how you could be a bit smarter, potentially allowing the kids to still have fun whilst obviously getting the same out of, you know, keeping them on the straight and narrow and getting the amount of time in, because, you know, full-time education takes a lot of time. And I suppose hopefully, yet maybe within that, you get some time out from the school to go and do, instead of PE sessions, for example, it might be that you're going to do some, you know, some tennis in-house with a coach coming in to do that, or the kid coming out to the club to do some of that stuff, to take up some of that time, to make it a bit smarter for them, rather than them having to do, like, you know, curriculum sports that they do. But certainly, I think, you know, 20 to 25 hours is sufficient. I think they're going to be doing probably an hour and a half-ish a day of S&C, in my view. They're going to have to be quite strong. They're going to have to build up this, you know, flexibility and that type of stuff. In terms of play, they're going to have to be doing, like you say, probably maybe like an hour and a half morning, hour and a half evening, or an hour in the morning and 2 hours, however it splits, of practice. So, yeah, their day tends to be probably more than lines of, you know, potentially 4 or 5 hours of just tennis, isn't it? You couple that on top of the extra full-time day of a, you know, a full-time education, there's not much time left in the day to kind of, you know, do all the other bits, is there really? So yeah, I've probably gone around that quite a long-winded way, but I think, yeah, 20, 25, putting in the strength and conditioning, putting in your practice time, that you say, is a minimum, really. And you think it's like, you know, say hard work beats talent. If you're going to work hard, you put the time in, don't you? And if you put enough time in, then you should be getting rewards from it. Otherwise, something's going wrong.
I think so. And I think one of the other things I was obviously thinking about, and we might have mentioned it in part one, is in terms of obviously thinking about my journey and probably yours when we were younger, by no means sort of national level players, but we always played sort of two sports, didn't we? Two, three sports. So, you know, tennis and football. So I guess potentially, you know, a parent listening to this thinking, oh, you know, by 12 years old, as my son or daughter now got to really focus on one sport, I think that probably the answer is going to be yes, unfortunately. It may be a hard thing to hear, but I think in terms of that social element, it's potentially going out and playing a football or a netball or gymnastics and doing that sort of more on a recreational level. But I think if, like you say, that dedication to reaching that end goal of being a national champion or making a career out of it, I think this now, as of 11, 12 years old, I think that's, it's quite a pinch point for me, certainly. I mean, other coaches might argue slightly earlier, slightly later, you could potentially get away with it. Again, this comes very much back to the individual we're teaching in front of us, I think. But yeah, I think the S&C is probably one of the big things. And we haven't even, I mean, it's such a topic in terms of like injuries and making sure your body is strong enough to endure the workload that you're, you know, at a very tender age, say doing at least 3 hours a day, there's going to be a lot of stress and strain on it, on such a young body. And, you know, growth spurts are going to be a big thing as well. I think it's just last in the course, isn't it, a little bit? And I think if any player who is maybe 14, 15 listening to this and thinking, can I do this, I'd certainly be, look, just keep going. You've got to stay positive with it. You've probably got a good team around you that's going to get you there, but it's hard to listen to that when you feel like you maybe should be on court. And that's probably one of the hardest things mentally. You feel like you should be coming back early from injuries. So I know I'm delving into an absolute minefield here for you, Ryan, in terms of injuries, and maybe digressing from our national champion topic, but it's part of the journey, isn't it? If you're never going to make it to a national champion without an injury, are you really?
Yeah, I think the other thing to kind of, that we haven't really discussed so much, is also, you know, apart from always doing all the tennis, turning into this big journey that is going to be national champion. A couple of other things that we've got to consider along the way, and we need our players to also know, is that, you know, it might still not happen. I think you've got to kind of just bear that in mind, because there's a lot of other players around, you know, the UK and that are going to be playing, having the same dreams. We definitely wouldn't, you know, tell them they can't do it. We definitely tell them that they've got to go and chase their dreams. But I think also you've just got to be, sometimes there's got to be a bit of reality in there as well, that it might not happen. It's not to say it's not going to happen. And the other secondary thing I'd probably say to it is burnout, right? So players that I know or have seen that have played full-time, not lasted because, you know, either loses the enjoyment factor, it's, you know, they don't get a little bit of time with their mates. And so I think within encompassing that kind of, that love for the sport, I do think, you know, you do have to have a day off. You have to go and see your friends. You need to decompress. You need to rest. You need to kind of take your mind off of tennis at times. You know what I mean? I don't know if that resonates with you a little bit with your players. But yeah, I think that's really important to know, just to kind of keep the fulfillment, because it's a hard task kind of getting it. We're talking, you know, 14 to 16 now, but we're probably reaching the upper reaches of 16 to 18s now, aren't we? And we're kind of thinking, right, okay, this is the business end. We're trying to get to the top. But this player has been playing since they're 5, and they've been doing a lot of tennis. We've got to make it fun. We've got to make sure that they're feeling like part of a team. They're enjoying, you know, enjoying themselves. They've got rest days. They can go and see the mates. Do you know what I mean? So it still feels like a normal life.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, obviously there are going to be distractions for players. You know, you're going to have those social groups, quite rightly, away from tennis, which you allude to. I think you do need. There may be things that entice you to do things at 16, and that's not to say like bad things necessarily, but there are going to be, you know, times where your friends go to a theme park or something like that, and you know you can't do that because there are going to be things. So, but I think the world that you're in, you're going to be training with players that are going to be obviously of similar caliber to yourself. So a lot of your friendship groups are probably going to be at this point with players that are very similar standard to you. So they're going to have similar interests. So you're probably going to, you know, go to an arcade bowling, and you're going to keep yourself sensible and hydrated, and you're maybe going to get back to a dorm or something like that if you're on site somewhere, and stretch together, and you'd like to think it is going to be sort of like that, but you will have that social element to it. But yeah, I know it's, yeah, I mean, we're I guess we're touching on lots of different topics here, and could delve into them a lot deeper, but I think for me, let's say we're now getting to that 17, 18 year olds. This is the journey that we've sort of encompassed and put them on, and they're maybe heading towards these national championships now. For you, does anything change in the build up to, say, a national championship? So we're talking about, obviously, like the biggest tournament of a year. So let's say the journey has come to this very crescendo now. We're entering them into the 18s nationals. They're unseeded, but they've been around. But it's their last chance to become a national junior champion, 18 years old. You know, does anything change? Is it a case of kind of, you know, you've done the hard work? Is it a very relaxed approach for you? Is it a case of actually, you know what, this is your last shot. If you don't take it, that's it. Some people might be like that. Some parents or coaches might be like that. I mean, what are your thoughts?
I think that's a really tough question. Yes. I like it. I mean, obviously, you know, we want to get that player for national champion, don't we? And if we're saying unseeded, you know, I think we've got to probably assume possibly that they might be, they've got a little bit of a chance here. But if they're unseeded, I mean, we've got to first of all tell them, right, we're going to get in there. This is your time now, isn't it? So it's up to you. Give them the ownership to a degree. If they want it that much, for me, I think a player will do it themselves. And they'll be sort of self-regulating themselves to, you know, to train at the right times and to practice in the right ways. And like you say, if they're going to socialize, you know, with that goal in the back of their head and that mind. So we don't want to be kind of too regimented, I don't think. But we still want them to understand that, you know, this is the goal, this is what it's going to take. They're obviously at this point, they're a very, very good tennis player. And I think for me, it's just, it's only going to be small, small differences, right? We're not going to be teaching them how to, I suppose, like how to, like, technically it's probably going to go a little bit differently now, isn't it? We're going to be more tactical. We're going to be thinking more about researching the other players and how they play and trying to find their strengths and weaknesses and trying to find the game plan that's going to basically take those players out of the game and then hopefully, you know, get us results. I think it's going to be, yeah, probably homework for me now, like, you know, from my point of view, but I think also for the player as well to take a bit of ownership to watch and maybe between us kind of coming up with our thoughts and see if they align or whether they don't. And then, yeah, just trying to find those little factors that might get us over the line.
It's interesting you sort of mentioned that, and I guess we've always been taught as coaches to sort of, you know, do scouting and, you know, I say scouting, obviously just research on opponents. And it's a different dilemma, isn't it? Do you put a player in a bubble and make it very much about them, play your tennis when the ball's lit, again, you know, old analogy, sort of when the ball's in your court, it's up to you. Don't worry about what your opponent does, but be mindful and work out weaknesses as you go. You know, some coaches will be very much, look, this player in front of me is such a problem solver, loves that kind of environment to actually just work out on the spot. Or some players like to be spoon-fed information, don't they? So again, a lot of this, as we're suggesting, is, and as you've rightly, quite rightly said, is just an idea of giving that information to a player and us as coaches doing research. But some players will, again, want it done very differently. So anybody listening to this, again, if you're a player, you and your coach will have a good rapport and relationship by this point. So it's really making sure that you have a clear plan together in terms of how that first match is going to go, and try not to look too far ahead in the draw. But some people will try and map their draw out because they'll want to know who they're playing and sort of plan to see how they play. So you listen to like Grand Slams and some people don't even bother looking in the draw. They look at their first round opponent and they try not to work out when they're playing Alcaraz or, you know, Igor Swiatek or whoever it may be. So
I think they're kind of, you know, I say they'll be going round by round. In my case, I'm thinking round by round, bit like any other, you know, other sport. You just deal with the next thing that's coming, don't you? And then you kind of deal with that, and then you focus on the next bit when you've got that next couple of days to kind of focus on it. And by that time, you know, this time, guys, your son or daughter is going to be a very, very good tennis player. So I suppose the coach just then has to just chuck in little nuggets of information, don't they? Like, not like when we're first starting with these kids, you know, they don't know as much, but now by this time they should know probably, you know, almost the same as us, you know what I mean? They should be very, very knowledgeable of the game. They should know how to set themselves up for matches. They should know how to, you know, prepare themselves for matches. And then we're just there for, you know, a bit more moral support, as well as giving them those handy tips and tricks that they might not see. And then just being there for them, you know, kind of just being that person that if they need you, they need you. You know, if they don't, and, you know, they just want you to, you know, sort of sit back a little bit, and you just kind of, you know, I suppose the relationship goes, you know, coach leading player, and then that's almost then player leading the coach, isn't it? You know, by the end, towards the end, because obviously they're getting to a very good level, so they don't need our support so much. But I think we've, you know, so let's say obviously we've got to the final, you know, the final now, and hopefully you've got yourself a national champion.
Woo! Yeah. How do we celebrate?
Exactly, yeah, go and celebrate, do it, you've got to do it, yeah. But yeah, I think it's I think, you know, this isn't obviously a Bible rule that we've talked about, it's just our particular thoughts and feelings on it, isn't it, really? Yep. We'll probably go through this and probably could add things, and because it's obviously unscripted, we're kind of just saying as we feel at the time. So please don't take it as gospel, and, you know, it's, there are going to be other things that I'm sure other coaches listening to this and other players' parents might be also adding. So, and great, because obviously it sparks discussion. I think it's really important to spark that discussion, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, so hopefully that's given you a bit of a taste there, everybody out there, to kind of understanding, you know, how we get there. I think it was a great topic. Am I
Well
allowed to
chosen. Well
ask
chosen.
the next topic?
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, if the next one's like that, then we'll be about five parts into it. But yeah, no, I think I echo those kind of things before I let you sign off on this pod for us. I think it, yeah, it is just very much start in three, enjoy it, train, and hopefully make it. Hopefully make it.
Yeah, that's it. But, you know, obviously, just to leave it on there. Chase your dreams, guys. Work hard. And thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed these two parts. And we'll be back for more podcast action very soon. It's
Thanks,
nice
guys.
speaking to you. Take care. Speak to you soon, all. Bye bye.